This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth, and certainly important for all people. Now today I'm going to continue my Roots of Anti-Semitism series. Boy, I know this is going to cause some gnashing of teeth in Tel Aviv, but that's the way the cookie crumbles, ladies and gentlemen. You know, Europeans have been blamed a long time for slavery, and they've been taught to feel guilty for slavery. If you remember, just a few short years ago, President of the United States, Bill Clinton, went to Africa and apologized for slavery. And it's a very common issue. It's a very common event to hear teachers or educators or writers or any sort of commentators who discuss this issue on television and talk about the fact that the white race was guilty of this enslavement of African Negroes and that we have a responsibility for this enslavement, that it was a terrible event and we should acknowledge it, understand it, and really have some serious, regrets. I guess that's maybe the right word for it. The point is that we are told constantly that, you know, the white race enslaved so-and-so. The white race committed these problems. Well, you know, there always has been, a sense of group guilt for a long time. When the Americans fought the French in the French Indian Wars, actually the British and the Americans at that time together in the French Indian Wars, we looked at the French as, you know, pretty negative, and we certainly condemned them for their actions. In the Second World War, we condemned the Germans, we condemned the Japanese, they condemned us. It's pretty natural for there to be some sort of group attacks, and sometimes group guilt is assigned on individuals. We have certainly taken that position. In fact, it's an historical position. It's always been done. But what's interesting is today that I'm going to go into an issue that has not been explored much in the massive press. In other words, Europeans are supposed to feel guilty for colonialism. They're supposed to feel guilty for slavery. But the role of that very unique chosen minority, that very powerful minority today that has so much influence in media and so much influence in government, so much influence in the way we view the world, because they have so much power in Hollywood, so much power in the press, in publishing, in books, and in the media interpretation of events that we have that really goes on all over the world. They have a great deal of power. And it's interesting that there has been no assessment of any sort of responsibility for certain horrible aspects of slavery with that very special minority. And I'm going to show you some documents today, and I'm going to quote to you from some Jewish historians, major Jewish historians and major sources, talking about how the fact that the slave trade itself, which in some ways and in many ways was always the very worst part of the entire slavery situation. You know, it's one thing to live in a situation of slavery where you have a family and you have you're working on a plantation. It's another thing to be shipped over in what they call the Middle Passage from Africa to America in a period of months, living in your own excrement with an incredible death toll. It was just an incredible, and it was a wrong. There's no question about it. It was an incredible wrong. And I tell you, all races have been guilty of certain wrongs historically. But the interesting aspect is, I'm going to quote to you from Jewish sources, showing that the incredible domination of this trade was overwhelmingly, and this shipping of the blacks and the way they did it was overwhelmingly run by Jews. There, I said it. I said the J word. And boy, I know you're going to have problems with that. Now, no one would even bat an eye if I talked about the white involvement of slavery. No one would bat an eye when somebody talked about white mistreatment of Indians, or no one would bat an eye about or white mistreatment of Jews. But if you ever talk about that special chosen race, then you're in big trouble. Well, I'm going to talk about the slave trade in a moment in detail with some fantastic quotes. First, though, I want to give you some latest information from the web and from some of the writings of a Jew whom I very much admire, Yuri Avnery. And Avnery, he's a former Israeli Zionism and Jewish supremacist for exactly what it is. He has really been quite an incredible, courageous individual. And he just wrote an individual piece, an article, which is interesting. It's called Who's the Dog, Who's the Tail? And it concerns the recent paper by Walt and Mearsheimer. The paper, of course, I've been connected with quite a bit in an effort to discredit the paper. But anyway, let's talk about this paper, and let me give you some excerpts from this recent article, Who's the Dog and Who's the Tail? And this is, again, by a courageous former member of the Israeli Knesset. Now, here's some of the excerpts available, and you're going to really find this interesting. It sounds like something that I would have written. Quote, the findings of the two professors are right to the last detail. Every senator and congressman knows that criticizing the Israeli government is political suicide. Two of them, a senator and a congressman, tried and were politically executed. The Jewish lobby was fully mobilized against them and hounded them out of office. This was done openly to set a public example. If the Israeli government wanted a law tomorrow annulling the Ten Commandments, 95 senators at least would sign the bill forthwith. Now, I don't usually tell these stories because they might give rise to the suspicion that I am paranoid. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is my commentary here. The stories he will begin to tell you here, I can tell you some of my own that are almost identical. But let's go ahead and go with this story. For example, 27 years ago, I was invited to give a lecture tour in 30 American universities, including all the most prestigious ones, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, MIT, Berkeley, and so on. My host was the Fellowship of Reconciliation, a respected non-Jewish organization, but the lectures themselves were to be held under the auspices of the Jewish Bet Hillel chaplains. On arrival at the airport in New York, I was met by one of the organizers. There's a slight hitch, he told me. 29 of the rabbis have canceled your lecture. In the end, all the lecture did take place under the auspices of Christian chaplains. When we came to the lone rabbi who had not canceled my lecture, he told me the secret. The lectures had been forbidden in a confidential letter from the Anti-Defamation League, the thought police of the Jewish establishment. The salient phrase has stuck to my memory. While it cannot be said that member of the Knesset Avery is a traitor yet. And another story from real life. A year later, I went to Washington, D.C. in order to sell the two-state solution, which at the time was considered an outlandish, not to say crazy, idea. In the course of the visit, the Quakers were so kind as to arrange a press conference for me. When I arrived, I was amazed. The hall was crammed full, practically all the important American media represented. Many had come straight from a press conference held by Golda Meir, who was in town. The event was to last an hour, as is usual, but the journalists did not let go. They bombarded me with questions for another 2 hours. Clearly, what I had to say was quite new to them, and they were interested. I was curious how this would be reported in the media. And indeed, the reaction was stunning. Not a word appeared in any of the newspapers, on radio or TV. Not a single word. By the way, 3 years ago, I again held a press conference, this time on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. It was an exact replica of the last time. The crowd of reporters, their obvious interest, the continuation of the conference well beyond the appointed time, and not a single word in the media. I could tell some more stories like these, but the point is made. I recount them only in connection with the scandal recently caused by two American professors, Stephen Walt of Harvard and John Mearsheimer of the University of Chicago. They published a research paper on the influence of the Israel lobby in the United States. In 80 pages, 40 of them footnotes and sources, the two show how the pro-Israel lobby exercises unbridled power in the United States Capitol, how it terrorizes the members of the Senate and the House of Representatives, how the White House dances to its tune, if indeed a House can dance, how the important media obey its orders, and how the universities, too, live in fear of it. The paper caused a storm. And I don't mean the predictable wild attacks by the Friends of Israel, which means almost all politicians, journalists, and professors. These pelted the authors with all the usual accusations. They were anti-Semites, that they are resurrecting the protocols of the elders of Zion, and so forth. There was something paradoxical in these attacks, since they only illustrated the author's case. In another excerpt from the longer article, the findings of the two professors are right to the last detail. Every senator and congressman knows that criticizing the Israeli government's political suicide. I think that's it. I think... By the way, American guests in Israel who know that at home it's forbidden to mention the influence of Jewish Israel lobby are dumbfounded to see that here the lobby does not hide its power in Washington, but openly boasts of it. American-Israeli relations are indeed unique. It seems that they have no precedent in history. It's as if King Herod had given orders to Augustus Caesar and appointed the members of the Roman Senate. Some very powerful words, and that's by Yuri Avnery, or Avnery, I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his name, and he hasn't had enough media for me to actually hear how his name is pronounced, but I have been reading his material for a long time, and I wanted to share with that. Okay, now to the roots of anti-Semitism, and you can find a lot of the documentation for this in my book, Jewish Supremacism. And I urge you to go, if you doubt any of these quotations and these positions, and let's start talking about the slave trade. And let's talk about some of the roots of it in terms of Jewish history. And that is the quotation from Leviticus 25:44 in the Old Testament. And this is verse 44. As for your male and female slaves whom you may have, you may buy male and female slaves from among the nations that are round about you. In 46 he says, or the Bible says, you may bequeath them to your sons after you to inherit as a possession forever. You may make slaves of them, but over your brethren, the people of Israel, you shall not rule one over another with harshness. Ladies and gentlemen, the institution of slavery has existed throughout most of human history. Trade in human flesh has never been looked upon as a noble occupation. Compassionate men and women have long decried cruel mistreatment of slaves, especially of slaves who were women and children. They decreed the action of slaveholders and slave traders. Even Jesus Christ himself did so. Many agreed with Christ's admonitions to slaveholders to treat their slaves kindly, in contrast to the benevolent image assigned to them by the media. Jews historically dominated an international institution that embodied the darkest evils of human exploitation, and that is the slave trade. My introduction to the important Jewish role in slave trading came from an article about Jews written by a leading Jewish historian and apologist, Jacob Marcus. And it comes from none other than the popular Encyclopedia Britannica. Marcus casually remarked about the Jewish control of commerce in the Middle Ages, particularly the slave trade. Quote, in the Dark Ages, the commerce of Western Europe was largely in his, the Jews' hands. In particular, the slave trade. The Jewish mastery of the slave trade did not go unnoticed to Christian writers of the Middle Ages. I read poignant accounts of European children who suffered sexual and other abuses from Jewish slave traders who acquired them. In Roman times, they often followed the path of conquering Roman armies and enslaved enemy soldiers and civilians. Chroniclers of the ancient medieval periods wrote of their preference for fair women and children, and of their frequent sale in the Levant. The Jewish slavers were more than happy to satisfy darker men's taste for white flesh. Horrified by reports of abuse of Christian women and children by Jews, a number of Christian principalities issued edicts detailing these abuses and forbidding Jews to own or trade in Christian men, women, or children. Jews, in writing their own histories, have matter-of-factly acknowledged the Jewish role in slave trading, looking at it simply as an extremely lucrative Jewish commercial venture. In A History of the Jew, from Babylonian Exile to the End of the Second World War, published by the Jewish Publication Society of America, the author writes very emphatically, quote, "Jews were among the most important slave dealers in European society." Now, it really surprised me when I found out that Jews played a prominent role in American slavery, because up to that part of my life, I didn't dream that they had played any role in that era. In the early 1970s, I came across a book called Who Brought the Slaves to America by Walter White. I could understand the role of Jews in the slave trade of the Mediterranean region, but it seemed unlikely to me that the very small Jewish population in the early American colonies could dominate such a large enterprise. I also retained, at that time, Hollywood's image of white men, perhaps even Southerners, sailing to Africa and rounding up black natives for the slave trade. In movies, articles, and books, slavers were Anglo-Saxons with names like Smith or Jones. Usually they're hard-drinking, uncouth Southern types. Later, I learned that slavery was ubiquitous in Africa among native blacks themselves, and that they were seldom rounded up by whites. Usually black African slaveholders were the ones who sold them to the slave traders. Who Brought the Slaves to America steered me to the library collections that house the records of the slave ships. Contemporary accounts and a number of Jewish historians who documented the role Jews have played in slavery. The Jewish writers I read were prideful in their accounts of the great Jewish slave traders. A good case is in point is Mark Raphael's Jews and Judaism in the United States, a documentary history. Quote, "Jewish merchants played a major role in the slave trade. In fact, in all the American colonies, whether French, Martinique, British, or Dutch, Jewish merchants frequently dominated. This was no less true on the North American mainland, where during the 18th century, Jews participated in a triangular trade and brought slaves from Africa to the West Indies and there exchanged them for molasses, which in turn was taken to New England, converted into rum for sale in Africa. Isaac da Costa of Charleston in the 1750s, David Franks of Philadelphia in the 1760s, and Aaron Lopez of Newport in the late 1760s and early 1770s dominated Jewish slave trading on the American continent. In North America, the slave trade had its most powerful center in Newport, Rhode Island. Newport formed a pivotal part of the triangular slave trade of rum and molasses from New England to Africa for slaves and back to the West Indies and the colonies with the human cargo. I discovered it was no coincidence that Newport, the center of the slave trade, had the oldest synagogue in America and the largest thriving Jewish community in the American colonies. Aaron Lopez, a Portuguese Jew of Marano descent and a resident of Newport, was one of the most powerful slave traders in the Americas. He owned dozens of ships and imported thousands of blacks into the Western Hemisphere. In an account of just two voyages of one of Lopez's ships, the Cleopatra, at least 250 blacks perished. Such horrendous loss of life and such a dirty business did not prevent Jewish chronicler Jacob Marcus from praising Lopez. Quote, "What can be said about this most attractive figure. Although Lopez acquired riches in the colonies, he violated the anti-British non-importation trade agreements during the revolutionary period, supporting Britain's interests rather than the colonies. Jews dominated the slave trade, not only in the American colonies, but all over the New World. In a major Jewish history of the early Americas called New World Jewry, 1492 to 1776, one can find the following passage. They came with ships carrying African blacks to be sold as slaves. The traffic in slaves was a royal monopoly, and the Jews were often appointed as agents of the crown in their sale. They were the largest ship chandlers in the entire Caribbean region, where the shipping business was mainly a Jewish enterprise. The ships were not only owned by Jews, but were manned by Jewish crews and sailed under the command of Jewish captains. Many Jewish writers chronicled the Jewish role in slavery, often boasting of their shrewdness in the business. Quote, the West India Company, which monopolized imports of slaves from Africa, sold slaves at public auctions against cash payment. It happened that cash was mostly in the hands of Jews. The buyers who appeared at the auctions were almost always Jews, and because of this lack of competitors, they could buy slaves at low prices. On the other hand, there was also no competition in the selling of the slaves to the plantation owners and other buyers, and most of them purchased on credit payable at the next harvest in sugar. Profits up to 300% of the purchase value were often realized with high interest rates. If it happened that the date of such an auction fell on a Jewish holiday, the auction had to be postponed. This occurred on Friday, October 21, 1644. Now, these are Jewish sources, ladies and gentlemen. Although certainly indefensible by today's moral standards, slavery in the United States was many times preferable to the incredibly cruel and murderous conditions of African slavery. The greatest inhumanity of black slavery is associated with the passage to America. Some say that 10 to 15% of black slaves died in the cramped and filthy conditions on the ships. Since the Jews have dominated the slave trade from ancient times, I realized that it is not only blacks who have suffered from those inhuman conditions, but also untold numbers of white people from the Mediterranean region. It should also be pointed out that not only were Jews the principal slave traders, they had a markedly higher per capita holding of slaves than did non-Jews. Quote, all through the 18th century into the early 19th, Jews in the North were to own black servants. In the South, a few plantations owned by Jews were tilled with slave labor. In 1820, over 75% of all Jewish families in Charleston, Richmond, and Savannah owned slaves, employed as domestic servants. Almost 40% of all Jewish householders in the United States owned one slave or more. There were no protests against slavery as such by Jews in the South, where they were always outnumbered at least 100 to 1. Very few Jews anywhere in the United States protested against chattel slavery on moral grounds. Now, considering that less than 10% of all colonists owned slaves, Marcus reveals that individual Jewish households, 40% owned slaves, that they were far more likely to own slaves than were Gentiles. With their comparatively greater numbers in the Mediterranean world, Jews constituted disproportionate slaveholders in the ancient medieval world, just as they were in the colonies. The importation of slaves to America is a relatively recent historical phenomenon, and it lasted about 200 years. From before the time of Christ to the African trade of the 1700s, most of the slaves owned and bartered by Jews were in fact white. When I learned of the Jewish role in the slave trade, it seemed to me that it could have certainly added to the resentment against the Jews felt by their host populations. Being known as the greatest perpetrators of the slave trade is not the best of public relations for Jews. It's no wonder that the Jewish-dominated media have avoided the issue. Only Jewish scholars who faithfully record Jewish history, primarily for Jewish readers, are allowed to travel on such forbidden historical ground. After my first efforts on national television in the early 1970s to expose the Jewish role in slave trading on PBS Black Perspectives in the News. The Nation of Islam also did extensive research on the issue. Their historical research department came up with a tremendous amount of documented material on the subject, and they published a book called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. Today, simply by repeating the words of prominent Jewish historians on the Jewish role in slavery, one becomes guilty of anti-Semitism. It was only when the public began to learn some of the little-known facts previously reserved for Jewish scholars that the ADL found it necessary to counter such anti-Semitic propaganda. The ADL and other Jewish organizations have responded by trotting out a number of prestigious Jewish scholars who have publicly announced that the Jewish role in the colonial slave trade was, quote, minimal. In Spielberg's blockbuster movie on the slave trade, Amistad, there was hardly a Jew to be found in the film. Although the Jews dominated the Newport, Rhode Island slave trade, all the slavers in the film seem conspicuously Christian. A number of articles that discussed Amistad and the slave trade, including Time and Newsweek, went out of their way to deny a major Jewish role in slave trading. Unfortunately, most of their readers were not told what prominent Jewish historians themselves wrote about the matter before it became an embarrassing issue. Few will read the words of the editor of the magazine of the American Jewish Historical Society. Quote, Jewish merchants played a major role in the slave trade. In fact, in all the American colonies, whether French, British, or Dutch, Jewish merchants frequently dominated. This is no less true on the American mainland. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, I'm trying to get an understanding of the sources of anti-Semitism, and the Jewish community themselves complain about so-called anti-Semitism among the black people of the United States of America. And again, maybe part of that rising anti-Jewish feeling is because blacks have come, many of them at least, have come to understand the accurate historical role that Jews played in the slave trade. But it is interesting if you look at the moral aspects and ramifications of all this. Because think about it a moment. I mean, if white people are often compared and criticized and fully put down in media for slavery, how many times have you seen renditions of white people mistreating black people, of the scourge of slavery talked about and how Lincoln ended this terrible scourge of slavery, of the white slavery of blacks, etc., etc., white racism and all the rest of it? Isn't it kind of interesting that there's not a word, not a mention of the chief perpetrators of the slave trade itself? You know, when we talk about the problems of drug addiction, we talk about the victims of drug addiction and those in their art, but don't we really savor our greatest opposition, our greatest sense of anger for the drug dealers, in fact, the drug kingpins? And in the slave trade, isn't that exactly the role of the Jews in that racket? So, ladies and gentlemen, there are Jews that understand this role, and there are Jews that are concerned about this role. But the point is that the average American knows nothing of this. Historically, we are just given basically what the Jewish supremacists and the Jewish extremists want to give us, and they have made it stock and trade of their propaganda to make we European Americans feel guilty about our past by associating us with these problems. Of course, slavery existed all over the world, but at the same time, they continue to exonerate themselves and portray themselves as innocent victims. Now, tomorrow I plan to go into the issue of white slavery, which is a popular term for what's called prostitution. And the truth is that modern prostitution in many ways, especially that run by the Orquestra and the Orchestratsiya and the other Jewish so-called Russian mafias is truly slavery in a classical sense, in addition to being sexual degradation. And I will discuss that tomorrow. I will quote from some major Jewish researchers on the subject, and it's pretty unbelievable talking about, and it's a sad state of affairs talking about this issue of white slavery. You know, it's I quote from Mr. Spector, who did a story for the New York Times News Service, and he says, quote, he said, Spector identifies both the prostitutes and their masters. He quotes an Israeli white slave master, Jacob Golan. He says, quote, the women who work there, like nearly all prostitutes in Israel, are Russian. Their boss is not. Israelis love Russian girls, said Jacob Golan. They are blonde and good-looking and different from us, he said, chuckling. And it's the things that these girls go through, the suffering, the degradation, it's just incredible. Many of them are killed. Others, their lives are completely ruined. Others die even of diseases. Others become hopelessly addicted to narcotics. It's one of the greatest crimes of the modern era, and it's a crime that has affected literally millions upon millions of Eastern European women. Tomorrow I'll go into some of the history of that. I'll talk about Mr. Bristow, who's a Jewish writer, who talks about the history of prostitution and the Jewish role in that prostitution in the early white slave trade, where they would go into Poland and Eastern Europe, promise girls a new life in America, the New World, and then they would end up terribly enslaved and degraded in brothels in the New World. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, and I enjoy being with you today. You can check out the Yuri Avnery article on davidduke.com, and I hope that all of you listening will take the time to promote and really spread this website, and I think this program itself on the black slavery issue is a very important issue, and I think that just understanding how this evidence and this reality of the black slave trade has been kept from our consciousness by the media has to afford one more piece of evidence on how that, the Jewish extremists, the Jewish supremacists, you know, are not allowing the American people to get a clear view of the world. How many other things have they have affected in terms of our consciousness, or in terms of our awareness, if they've been able to hide their dominant role in the slave trade, which their own historians talk about? How many other things have they distorted in terms of our understanding of the world? Well, again, thanks so much for being with me, and I hope that all of you will use your fingers on the keyboards of your computers in front of you, and will spread the word of this program, of stormfront.org, the town hall section, and davidduke.com, and let's get the word out, and let's wake up our people and change the world. Thanks so much. I'll see you tomorrow.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.